This is Digital Story Podcast number 845, May 31st, 2022. Today's theme is Capturing the Joy of Celebration with Photography. I'm Derek Story. We certainly have had our share of images filled with heartbreak and anguish lately. Mass shootings, war, and disease fill our news feeds. But the month of June can help balance those emotions. The sense of accomplishment captured in graduation ceremonies, Father's Day, and the debut of summer activities can brighten our spirits. And when we get out our cameras and capture those moments, we can help spread the joy. More about that on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. For the first time in months, I welled up during a photo shoot. I was standing in the middle of a post-graduation ceremony at Santa Rosa Junior College, watching a family converge on a young woman in a cap and gown holding her certificate. Mom was crying, Dad was beaming, and the siblings were looking up in admiration at the accomplishment of their oldest sister. Against the odds of pandemic, assured financial challenges, and demanding coursework, she was graduating and ready for the next chapter of her life. The top of her cap was decorated in sequins that spelled UCLA. She was on her way. I was there with my camera, drinking in every life-affirming drop of joy. Finally, something beautiful. June is here, and it's time to add some balance to my life. I have gatherings planned with friends and family, photo assignments on the books, workshops on the calendar, and as much nature as I can squeeze in between. I'm tired of reading the news feed on my phone that emphasizes the darkness of our world. I know it's here, I know it's real, but I also know there is light. And I'm ready for the brightness of summer. When I capture one of those moments that warms my heart and makes me smile, not only do I get to experience it live, but I get to relive the joy countless times afterwards via a well-crafted photograph. This is the magic of photography. I bring this up because these moments are available to any of us. A playful pet, wondrous child, a Little League home run celebration, a quiet sunrise. These moments are everywhere, especially this time of year. And when we get tired of celebrating those quiet moments on the bright side of life, our social media feeds, they'll still be there, just in case you get tired of the light. So I've been thinking a lot about this lately, and I have been feeling a shift in my work, in tone, not in the world overall. The world overall actually feels darker to me right now. And that's saying something considering what we've been through the last couple of years. But there are more things happening right now. When I look at my phone and when I look at the news feed, it's amazing. It's amazing how much darkness there is there. And in fact, I did an exercise today. I was looking for stories online to go with the theme of this podcast, which was uplifting. So I'm not going to have, you know, a dark story. I'm not going to have something critical of something that's, well, honestly, meaningless. I'm not going to have any of that stuff. So I said, I only want stories that feel good and feel moving in a positive direction. So I went to one site, and then I went to another site, and another site, and another site. Now, I did find two stories to complement this first feature, but I have to tell you, it took me a little bit. And that's on photography sites. I'm not even talking about CNN or any of the big news sites. I'm not talking about Twitter. I'm not talking about Facebook. I'm not talking about any of that stuff where we already know what's there. I'm talking about on photography websites. And I just thought it was interesting that I had to work that hard to find a couple of what I considered positive stories to complement the feature story of this week's podcast. And I'm going, well, you know, isn't that fascinating? So I know where I probably shouldn't be going right now for these feelings that I'm after. Then on the flip side of this, yesterday, Sunday, because I record this on Monday, I was doing a little bit of yard work outside. And on the side of my house, I have, you know, what we call the industrial area. I love it. It's a fascinating place. I've got a couple of big 55-gallon water barrels that I'm going to use for the water that we reclaim from inside the house, the gray water that we use for plants and stuff in the garden. I have a compost bin that is up on some railroad ties. You know, I kind of made this cool little, you know, raised bed for that. We have an actual raised bed filled with, you know, soil that has tomatoes and carrots and fun stuff in it. I have all sorts of goodies over there on the side that are just, like I said, they're not the ornamental side of our yard. They're like where all the work happens, you know, the recycling bins and all that good stuff. And I have it pretty well organized. And I also, that's where I store the potting soil and the extra, you know, redwood chips and things like that. So I was over at the compost bin. This is a cool bin, by the way, for those of you that are into such things. It's on its side. It's a barrel on its side. It's a dark barrel. And of course, it has lots of ventilation holes and stuff in it. And a big old port, big old hatch. So it's easy to get stuff in and out of it. But then it sets on a stand on its side that has wheels. The stand has wheels. So it's easy just to rotate it. So you don't have to, you know, get your rake in there to turn it over. You just, you know, close the hatch and you can rotate it. And it makes it very easy to turn the compost. And as I mentioned, I have it up on these railroad ties, you know, that I'm just like, I find this stuff in the yard and I go, okay, let's say when we're redoing an area, I go, I'm going to save this stuff because I know someday I'm going to use it. And I try to keep it organized and all this. And I don't know what the previous owners used these railroad ties for. But, you know, I said, these are too cool to get rid of. So I've hung on to them for years, like 10 years, and finally had a use where I just kind of put them in a row. They're cut and I put them in a row and then I, you know, stack crossways on them and made a nice little raised, you know, platform for the compost bin. So it's easier to get in and out. It's not so hard on my back. So this bin's over in this industrial area, but there's all sorts of, you know, tree leaves on the ground and, you know, there's like a lot of plant stuff and organic material and there's some bugs from the compost bin. There's all that stuff happening over there. So it's kind of a fun place and it's a nice place to hang around in the afternoon because it's not as hot over there as it is in other places in the yard. So I was putting some stuff in the compost bin and I just caught out of the corner of my eye some movement behind it, you know, so there's the fence behind the compost bin, you know, and it's up on this little platform I built. And I just noticed some movement. So I look over there and there was not one, but there were two garter snakes. Now, these little guys, they're adorable. I'm a gardener, so I like garter snakes because, you know, they eat stuff that I don't like, like slugs, you know, they eat all that stuff. And there were two of them, and they were each about probably 18 inches long. And a garter snake has yellow stripes on it. It has a yellow stripe that, one for sure, that runs along this whole length and sometimes, you know, more than one. And so they're pretty easy to spot. So these two guys they just love this area, I guess, because there's lots for them to play around in. They have shelter underneath the compost bin on the raised platform. And I'm sure there's all sorts of bugs and stuff hanging around there. So it seems like a great place for them. And they were just having fun. They were just kind of playing around and finding stuff to eat. And they were like crossing each other, you know, and I don't know what games garter snakes play, but it was super enjoyable just to watch them do their thing. And, you know, like, they were happy. They were happy to be there. They go, this is a great spot. We're hanging out here, which I'm perfectly fine with. I hope they do. And I hope they tell their friends, too. Eat all my slugs. I don't want them. So I was just thinking, it's so funny when you get out in summer and this time of year where you can be outside and you can be interacting with nature a little bit more. You know, we have more activities with each other as well. And suddenly the good things start to happen, or I start to notice the good things, as opposed to being locked up inside, you know, looking at my computer, looking at my phone. That seems to be mostly bad things happening there, unless I'm, you know, on one of our sites where we're interacting. And of course, we're a lot more fun than the rest of the world. I was just thinking, you know, these two snakes for me, just playing and having fun and, you know, eating all the stuff I don't want in my garden, it just for some reason crystallized the coming of summer. And I'm so happy that it's here. I'm so happy that I have workshops on the books. I'm so happy I have these photo assignments. So happy that I have these family gatherings and friend gatherings planned. I'm just so happy for all of this stuff. And I'm going to capture as much of it as I can with my camera. I'm not going to, you know, be one of those crazy people that where, you know, everything is a photo op. More in the flow. I like to capture things in the flow. Now, my photo assignments is completely different. I'm there. I have credentials on, all that kind of stuff. So that's a different thing. But even in the other things, I'm going to have fun with the pictures as well. And one of the things that I'm taking to my family gathering that I'm going to here soon is that I'm taking the Fujifilm Instax camera. And I'm just going to do just a whole bunch of instant photos during the course of this one day where people are gathering. And I'm just going to leave them out on the table and people can take them and they can do all that stuff. I'm going to take like 5 or 6 packs of film so that I can just leave these photos everywhere. And I'm going to be taking like these paparazzi shots, you know, just people interacting, smiling at the camera, you know, hanging out with, you know, maybe a family member they haven't seen in a while. Just going to do a bunch of those shots and then just leave them laying around and just tell people, if you see something you like, take it home with you, stick it in your wallet and pull it out and look at it when you're getting bummed about something, you know, that you don't have control over. This is something that you have control over. You have control over how you spend your time, your free time anyway, and who you spend it with. That is my summer balance. You know, I want to be thinking about, okay, we're coming into summer, those of us in North America. Let's embrace the light. Let's get some balance using our photography compared to the other stuff that we're seeing online that's really tough to digest. And honestly, that we can't do much about. So let's focus on the things that we can do something about. Anyone can go see a sunrise, right? Anyone can, you know, go to a little league game and hang out and watch these kids get thrilled when they get a hit. Anyone can do most of these things that I'm talking about. It's that time of year to do it. Let's get our cameras. Let's go take some pictures. And then let's relish the good shots that we get and hang on to those moments to help us balance out all the other stuff that we're subjected to. All right, let's talk a little bit about workshops for a moment. I didn't talk anything about them last week. We're in the middle of our infrared workshop now, which is, yay, so fun. I'm so happy to have that fired up and going. But we have our Eastern Sierra workshop coming up in September, and our Oregon Coast Photography Workshop coming up in November. And both of those, I have, you know, great plans already. I have our places to stay. You know, I have the itinerary pretty well worked out, and I'm just thrilled about both of them. And if you want to go to something where you get to hang out with other photographers, experience a little bit of joy, experience some great picture making, experience some good food, all that kind of stuff. We have two workshops that still have a couple seats open. One in September, Eastern Sierra. One in November, Oregon Coast. And all you have to do is click on workshops on the digital story or go to thenimblephotographer.com, look at the workshops there. You can read about them and you can reserve your place now. And I just want to say that You know, when I watch people in our online workshop or in our physical workshops get to hang out with other photographers and just talk shop and talk about all the stuff that there's shared interest in, it lights people up and it feels good. So I hope you get to experience some of that this year as well. Photographer teaches posing to prove anyone can be photogenic. And this is an article on Petapixel, and I have the link to it in the show notes. A posing coach and portrait photographer has a mission to help people who believe they aren't photogenic. David Sue from Sacramento, California, runs a course entitled How to Be Photogenic in 30 Days, as well as sharing quick and easy tutorials from his TikTok page. The 26-year-old has posted dozens of clips where he explains how to pose properly for different kinds of photos. He offers tips on how to level up Instagram selfies, how to pose for graduation photos, and explains the best outfits for photo shoots. Sue's overarching philosophy is based on confidence and authenticity, but he has specific poses that he likes to teach, such as leaning against the wall. Quote, kick the hip out a bit and away from the wall, then lean into the wall. Then use natural hand placements from grabbing the jacket button to grabbing the fingers, he says in a YouTube video. While this is a standard pose, Sue likes to direct the subject to a more fashion pose by doing something more unusual against the wall. Quote, I love putting an editorial and magazine twist to my portraits. I don't want it to look too traditional, like a LinkedIn headshot kind of vibe, he explains. Something you can do is stand further away from the wall and lean in with your shoulder. What makes us have a fashion look is the fact that we don't do this every day. A lot of fashion poses are meant to be striking, so it captures the viewer's attention, so doing an exaggerated move is more what gives it that fashion look. Another pose Sue likes is using a flight of stairs, a common feature in cities. One of my favorite things to do is give a strong masculine look by sitting wide-legged. You can go for various leans forward while keeping your chest forward. Opening up your energy towards the camera is what gives it a commanding badass energy. You can also very easily turn this around and make a softer look by turning to the side slightly and doing a leg crossover instead. As we turn our energy away from the camera, we have a softer look. Turning to the side can also have a slimming effect. And there's another couple of these poses that are listed in the article. And then there are links to his YouTube, TikTok work where you can actually watch some of these things. But I like the idea that he has here, which is, I'll tell you, if there's a way you can give people confidence when you're doing their portrait, and one of my favorite techniques for doing this, and I talk about this in a Medium article that just went up on Tuesday, went up today for you, is that, you know, really get your settings dialed in on a portrait shoot. You get your exposure and your white balance, get all that dialed in. I know that you're shooting in RAW and you have this big safety net in post-production. But the reason why I don't think you should depend on that safety net is because you want those images to look good on the back of the LCD. So when you turn that LCD around and you share it with the person that you're taking a picture of, they can look at it and go, wow, that's me? That looks good. I like that. The minute they see that, the minute they feel that, it changes everything in the photo shoot. Suddenly, they'll follow your commands more fluidly. That is, if you're, you know, telling them what to do. I don't do that much direction. They're thinking of things on their own. Their shoulders get a little square. Their head, you know, is a little taller. Everything happens good once they see some success on the back of the LCD. So in addition to what he's talking about here in this article, giving them, you know, confidence, one of my favorite ways, which I don't think he talks about, is making sure you get some good shots on the back of the camera and share them with whomever you're taking a picture of, a portrait of, especially if you're going to do more shots afterwards. That will help them feel good. And when they feel good, honestly, anyone can photograph very, very well. Master your craft. Why you should re-edit older photos using new skills. I found this piece on imagingresource.com, and there's a good video that goes with it. I'm just going to read you a couple paragraphs here and then talk about it. And I really don't know how to pronounce this photographer's name, so I'm going to do the best I can. Much like your photography skills improve with time and practice, so do your editing skills. Over time, you acquire new editing skills, software improves, and you develop new and different styles. What happens when a professional photographer like Pai Yersa of SLR Lounge re-edits a photo he captured more than a decade ago? When he started doing wedding photography in 2009, his editing style was very different. The image in question, and this is what they feature in the video, is an HDR-esque with a lot of contrast and high saturation. I'm sure we have images like this, especially from when we started photography or learned specific new techniques. The video shows why keeping your original RAW file is so important. You never know how your style and taste will change over time. It's always good to have an original file so that you can edit it again rather than be stuck with a processed file that you no longer like. And this is really the important point here. And I was talking about it last week in class in our infrared photography online course that shooting IR, for example, you know, shooting in RAW, you know, so much of IR is the processing side of it. I mean, once you get that capture, that RAW file, in IR, as composed of visible light, you can process that file, and I'm not exaggerating, 30 different ways and have 30 different photographs from that one RAW file. That's how flexible IR processing is. Now, visible light processing isn't quite as flexible, but as they're pointing out here in this article, over time, our tastes change, our style changes, and certainly the software tools we have to work with change. So if you keep your original RAW files from whenever, let's say 10 years ago, 11, 12 years ago, if you have those original RAW files, you can go back to them because they're still going to open up in, you know, all the major applications. And you can just start anew with them and process them with the aesthetics that you have now, with the new techniques that you've learned, and with certainly the improved software that you have now compared to a decade ago. And since they're RAW files, you know, you're not losing anything. You're not losing anything at all. And then if you really want to have some fun, compare it to the edit that you did a decade ago. Compare the new shot, and I think you'll see quite a shocking difference. I really do, most of the time. Now, sometimes certain types of shots, you'll process more or less the same. Let's say certain types of landscape shots. But when you start getting into portraits and urban work and creative and things like that, well, even in landscape, because as they're saying here, you know, a decade ago, HDR look was kind of a big deal. And I'm not talking about HDR look like we do now. In fact, this is a perfect example, right? The HDR stuff we did a decade ago was exaggerated. You know, we did go over the top because we could. Now, you know, in part, you know, Lightroom has helped with this. Adobe has helped with this. Their HDR tool that they introduced a few years back was more like getting more tonal range, more dynamic range out of your photo, not necessarily pushing it up over the top. And I think that's more the aesthetic that a lot of photographers use now. Let's get more out of our files, right? Let's control those shadows and highlights more to our taste, and let's not make the colors garish and all that kind of stuff. That's a big change in a decade. And the tools now really support that well. Your camera from 10, 12 years ago captures an amazing amount of information embedded in that RAW file that you can pull out with modern software. So I think this is a fun exercise. And if for some reason you can't get out for a little bit, like, you know, I was talking at the top of the show with summer coming and everything, let's say that you have to have, you know, a bunion surgery or something, kind of bummed about it, right? Because you want to get out there and do the summer thing I was talking about. Well, you'll get out in a couple weeks. In the meantime, maybe pull out some of those RAW files, revisit them with the new tools and techniques that you have now, and see what you can do. That 2 weeks will go by pretty fast, and then you can get out there and embrace summer. I just thought this was a good reminder about how valuable our original RAW files are and how much we can still do with them if we want to. All right, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. I'm going to start out with our Inner Circle folks and start out, first of all, by thanking them because they are the folks that support this podcast month in and month out. And they are also the folks that are delighting me on our new Inner Circle site on Derek Story Online, sharing their images and their thoughts and their questions. And I'm really getting to see more of our Inner Circle members and feel like I'm getting to know them better, and I really like that. So this is a fun endeavor. We're kind of taking it to a new level. If you're interested in helping support this community, helping support this podcast, and also just sharing with other photographers who care about the craft as much as you do, then click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You go over to our Patreon site. That's where you sign up. That's where, you know, the basic nuts and bolts of Inner Circleness are. But then you'll automatically get access to our other site where the photo sharing and the photo challenges and the Q&A and all that good stuff is happening. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting the show. I truly appreciate each and every one of you. I was thinking about my affiliate links. You know, I have the tiles, the B&H tile, and the Amazon tile, and all the pages of the Digital Story, so that if you're going to buy something, you're going to buy some new gear or something, if you click on those tiles first, or if you click on the links in the show notes, then that helps support the site. But the way that I was thinking about it was that my OM1 that I have, that I'm using for all these assignments that I've been talking about, that I have to tell you, I just love this camera. It's my favorite Micro Four Thirds camera ever, you know, and especially for work, especially when I have to deliver the goods. And that camera in particular, coupled with the 40-150 f/2.8 Pro lens, is just a killer. it's just a killer. And I look at the other guys out on the field, and they have these giant Canon lenses that they're lugging around, all the stuff. And, you know, my 40-150 looks quite reasonable. I don't look like an amateur at all. In fact, I look very professional. It's a very handsome-looking camera lens combination. But I have definitely a bit more lift in my step when we get into hour four and hour five of an assignment. And now I can't use affiliate stuff when I make my own purchases. That it doesn't work that way. It's not allowed, and nor should it be allowed. But it made me think that for those of you that are shooting Micro Four Thirds, or for those of you, for example, who are shooting Canon, we have these two new Canon cameras that were just released. I was just thinking, wow, you know, people say it's all about the picture and all this stuff. But I have to tell you, when you get a camera that you really resonate with, that you really like, and it fits in with, you know, the lenses and the accessories that you already have, it is fun. This last month or two where I've been doing a lot of assignments and working a lot with the camera, I'm out there with this camera and I'm going, I am having such a good time. I love this camera so much. You know, so anyway, that's kind of a side trail there to, you know, please click on the tiles if you're going to do this. But I'm not one of those people that say new gear isn't fun. I think new gear is fun. I just don't think you need new gear all the time. I mean, this is my first Micro Four Thirds camera since the EM1 Mark II. It's been a while, but boy, am I having a blast. If you're going to do something like this, go crazy like I did, please click on one of those affiliate tiles first, either the B&H or Amazon, if you use either of those sites. That helps support this podcast, and then you too can have some of this joy that I'm having out in the field with this new camera that just kills it. Just kills it. All right, and then finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. I've got to do some more printing. I got a little behind on it as part of the whole studio revamp here. So I found a new spot for my printer. I'm getting it set up, and I got to do some printing. Got a little bit of a backlog. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to set aside a morning and just do some prints, make a big pot of coffee, have a good old time. This is an activity that I truly like, especially on a stay-in day when I'm just hanging around here in the studio. And the main thing that I make sure I do is make sure I have my ink ahead of time and make sure I have lots of Red River paper and have different surfaces so that I can get involved in the creative process. You know, so that I can go, ooh, you know what? This would really look nice on a soft gloss or something like that. Red River Paper has a tile on all the pages of the digital store. You can click on it. You can go. You can learn about all these paper stocks they have. They'll help you figure out the best paper for the type of photography you're going to print. And they have everything else you need, tutorials, reviews, ink, all that good stuff. And they also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. These are fun stay-in days. You stay in. In my case, make a big pot of coffee and then make something beautiful to share with the world. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you can get out and experience some joy, no matter how small or how big it may be. Come back and join me next week. I'm working on some cool stuff. Until then, be creative, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.